Hi everyone, my name is Yudai Cai. Today I'm going to talk about searching for dark matter with the neutron star merger and quiet kilonova. I will explain what is quiet kilonova. This is a work done with Joe and team, and there will be many papers to come soon. This is the first paper on archive this June. Okay. So this is a very exciting time because we just saw a neutron star merger. And back in June, we proposed to use this to test dark matter scenarios. So now we actually have one data point that we can use in order to do this test. And so let's get into it. And let me first give you a very long and boring review of our understanding of dark matter. Okay, so this is our understanding of dark matter. We know next to nothing about the nature of dark matter. We don't even know if it's particle or whatever it is. But there are overwhelming observational, either astrophysical or cosmological evidences for dark matter. And one way to shed light on the dark matter is through direct detection. So when I say direct detection, it's just a dark matter hitting a standard model particle and kick this standard model particle with its kinetic energy. And then this kinetic energy, you can detect this standard model particle and then figure out what's the nature of the dark matter, what's its coupling, what's its mass. And using this strategy, we have been searching for example, a lot of the dark matter search for direct detection are searching for this WIMP dark matter. There's many different kind of experiment that is proposed, but there's also dark matter beyond this WIMP and or thermal dark matter. And during my PhD, this is what I mostly work on. Actually, I mostly work on proposing dark matter models and studying the experimental observational signatures and search method for dark matter hidden particle. So when I work on this, I mostly work on something called ELDR, that is also a thermal dark matter. I develop out Boltzmann codes and analytical approach, thermal averaging, and study the experimental signature and astrophysical signature. So these are all very exciting, but I also want to probe dark matter beyond thermal dark matter, beyond WIMP or ELDR, and also beyond direct detection limit. And what they mean is that I want to be able to probe cross-section that is lower than the future direct detection projection. And this work, in particular, I will propose the phenomenology of super-heavy asymmetric dark matter and neutron star implosion, and link that to neutron star mergers. And also, you can also probe more general dark matter with neutron star implosion and neutron star heating. But today I will just focus on the PEV to EEV, very heavy dark matter regime. And this is unrelated to the ELDR work that I just say, but you can also add self-interaction to this story. It will make things a little bit more complicated, but there might be other phenomenology. But today I will just focus on asymmetric dark matter and PEV to EEV regime. Good. So let me introduce you the new lamppost from astrophysics that is thinking about all different kinds of signatures that can be correlated to the neutron star implosion induced by the dark matter. Okay, and also we want to go beyond direct detection limits. Okay, so this is the outline or overview. First, I will talk about astrophysical signatures, including kilonova events and R process abundance. So a lot of you guys already know about this, but I'll mention a little bit more about this. Also, there's implosion optical signatures that we call it quiet kilonova. This is directly from the implosion. And also another implosion signature that is much more speculative, that is the fast radial bursts. Okay, so as you can see, what we're going to also do is also using the neutron star implosion to maybe explain the fast radial bursts, but that is much harder and much more speculative. Okay, and then there's also the indirect signature, something called black merger, and also a gravitational plus optical signature, we call it merger kilonova. But this is nothing but the neutron star merger galactic distribution, the radial distribution, And we will use this to do statistical tests to distinguish the different scenario of asymmetric dark matter. So when we propose this program, I dream for a neutron star merger because it's very exciting. And now we see it in 2017, August 17, we saw this neutron star merger. And it really is the signal, the golden age for the neutron star phenomenology. There's a lot of things you can do. And also it's a multi-messenger probe for new physics. Because, for example, when we first see supernova 1987A, there's a lot of signature we discuss. But until today, we still use that to constrain new physics scenario. So the analogy would be that this neutron star merger, once you can have a lot of them, you can also use that to constrain new physics. And today we're proposing one of these scenario, but there may be other things we can think of. Okay. So the question you want to ask me is, why neutron star? Why do we want to use neutron star to do the direct detection? So yes, yeah, so as the program suggests, we want to use the neutron star as a direct detection detector. And it's because the density of the detector is very important for direct detection. The denser the detector is, the higher the event rate is for a given volume. So the Earth has a density of around 5 times 10 to the 3 kilogram per cubic meter. And neutron star is the densest star that we know of. And they have the density of 10 to the 17 kilogram per meter cubic. So this is per cubic meter. So this is 10 to the 14 times denser. So if you have the same volume of detector, you can do 10 to the 14 times better with the neutron star. Of course, it's not really true you can do that well. It's hard to measure neutron star. But this is the idea. This is why, fundamentally, we can reach a higher sensitivity.
Sorry, doesn't it just depend on the target mass?
Yeah, yeah, roughly speaking. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but the same. Neutron star is it's almost a solar mass, right? But it's also,
What's the importance of density?
Oh, no, it's just in a certain volume. It's the same thing. I mean, yeah, it's the same thing, yeah. So, of course, yeah, you can just say it's directly related to the volume mass. But for a given volume, then you have a much more event rate, yeah. It's almost a black hole, but the degeneracy pressure is keeping it from collapsing. So, yes. What should I want to say? Yes. So, it's just the degeneracy pressure. So exactly what we're going to do here is to actually make it a black hole. We want to accumulate this asymmetric dark matter inside a neutron star to make it a black hole. Oh, one thing I want to also say is that it's more effective for a neutron star to collect the dark matter because of for a given volume, you can accumulate enough. So for example, if you have a much larger object but with the same mass, but it's much larger, then yes, you can also accumulate a lot of dark matter, but it will take a long time for them to go to the center and then form a black hole. So for neutron star, it's more effective that way. Yeah. Good. So this is the cross section that we're going to talk about today. So you can see this is a cross section of the dark matter and nucleon cross section. And the red line is above the red line is what we're going to talk about today. We'll talk about the cross section that is above the red curve. So this red curve, as I will explain later, is the above this red curve, you can assume something called maximum capture rate, which I will explain a little bit later. And here, this purple purple line and the green lines are the future sensitivity projection that we'll expect to see. And this black line is the current sensitivity for the xenon 110. And this dotted curve is the future neutrino floor, the irreducible neutrino background that dark matter detection can reach. So you can see that even if you assume maximum capture rate, you can already do better than the future xenon neutrino floor. And for the projection, we can even do better. This is not assuming the maximum capture rate. This projection, you can do much better in a higher mass regime. So this is why it's very exciting from the dark matter perspective. But other than the dark matter perspective, in terms of detecting the cross-section, there's also, oh, where is the piece? Oh, this is here. Okay, so there's also a lot of other astrophysical motivations. For example, there's missing pulsar problem. I'll mention briefly that is near the center of the galaxy. You don't see the post number of pulsar you expect to see. However, that could be just observational problem. But this dark matter implosion program goes very well with the new missing nodes. You can explain the missing pulsar problem very well. Also, maybe we can use that to explain FRB, which I also mentioned briefly. And there's also enrichment of R process element. Of course, now we know that the neutron star merger has to account for a certain amount of R process element. We're almost very sure. But there's also recent Draco measurements saying that there should be a diverse way of enriching the R process, because they see different jumps of the R process element. And the jump has order of magnitude difference in terms of the enrichment. So this says that maybe you need the distinctive events to create R process element. And maybe you can use both neutron star merger and neutron star implosion to explain
what
that.
What is Draco measurement?
Yeah, so there's a recent measurement of this Draco spheroidal galaxy that they actually look for the correlation between the jump in the R process abundance and the metallicity, and they found two jumps, and one jump is order of magnitude larger than the other. So it means that there should be various way of creating the R process element that the enrichment is drastically different, the order 10 or more different. Yeah, and let's say if you and they also estimate the merger rate. So merger rate can explain one of the jump, but it's hard to explain both. So that's the if you say that one could come from neutron star merger, maybe the other can come from neutron star implosion. Yeah. So implosion has more, there's a different prediction. Also, there's a new astrophysical object that we propose that is called black merger, that is a neutron star mass black hole binary merger. That is saying that when you have a binary system of neutron star, each of these neutron star can be imploded into black hole. So you have actually a black hole merger that was from neutron star merger, and they are neutron star mass. So Lewis actually also studied this after we proposed this, and they discussed the possibility of seeing this kind of event. Of course, it's very hard, but there's a possibility of seeing it. So good. So let me give these are the astrophysical motivation. Let me give you a quick overview of the neutron star implosion induced by asymmetric dark matter. So this is very easy to understand. So asymmetric dark matter is just a dark matter with particle and antiparticle asymmetry in the dark sector. It's very similar to our world, that there's more matter than antimatter, there's more dark matter than anti-dark matter. And the asymmetry often sets the dark matter radic abundance. But for us, what we want to use is just that asymmetry allows the efficient collection and collapse in the star without annihilating into lighter species. So you can collect a lot of dark matter without them annihilating away. That's the thing that we want to use. So you will accumulate a lot of the dark matter in the center, eventually in the center of the neutron star, and make it a black hole, and the black hole sucks the whole neutron star in. And I will explain later. And you can also extend this consideration to topological defects, cue balls, and relate these things to fundamental physics, particle physics models. And this is what we want to do also in the future. This is the neutron star implosion related to asymmetric dark matter. So let's get into a little bit more detail. The dark matter induced neutron star implosions require four physical processes. First, you want to accumulate enough dark matter in the neutron star that it can reach the critical mass to form a black hole. So you need to overcome the degeneracy pressure of the dark matter itself, if it's fermion, or overcome the pressure if it's a self-interacting boson, which I will say a little bit more. Then the dark matter has to thermalize after repeated scattering and reach the center of the neutron star. And eventually, this dark matter collapses into a black hole, and this black hole then sucks the whole neutron star in. Okay. So today, we'll consider the PEV to EEV asymmetric dark matter as an example because of the phenomenological reason, which I will say just in a few slides. But these are the processes. And okay, so let's get into a little bit more detail for the capture. So as I say, if you assume that dark matter nucleon cross-section is larger than this value and it's above this red curve, I make it small, but it's just this value, then it implies a maximum capture rate, meaning that everything within this maximum impact parameter, if the dark matter passes through the neutron star within this maximum impact parameter, it will be absorbed by the neutron star. Okay. So that the cross-section factor out and the dark matter capture time, if you define it as the time for a neutron star to collect critical mass of critical collapsing mass, then this time is just proportional to the velocity of the dark matter divided by the density of the dark matter in the halo. And from now on, I will assume an NFW profile from now on. So what this is telling us is just that if the dark matter is faster, it's harder to lose its kinetic energy, so it takes longer time to collect enough dark matter to collapse. And if it has higher density, it's easier to collect enough. So the TC is just how long it takes for dark matter to accumulate enough dark matter to eventually form a black hole. Good. So this is it. And then there's also three other processes. So as I say, repeated scattering, collapse, and boundary accretion. And you can estimate each of the time scale. So we did it in our paper. And you find out, we calculated in our paper. And we found out that each of these time scales are much shorter than the capture time. Capture time meaning from no dark matter into collecting enough of the dark matter. So from now on, we can just use the capture time to set the implosion time because it's the longest time. So this is very easy to parameterize. For other parameter range of the dark matter, it's not so easy. Each of these processes are important, and you also have to worry if each of the processes actually goes through. But for PEV to EEV asymmetric dark matter, all of this goes through and also it's easy to parameterize. That's why we choose PEV to EEV asymmetric dark matter. So of course, in the future, we'll try to extend to other kind of dark matter. But for now, we focus on this because the phenomenology is very clear and easy to do. Okay, so this is just what I say. We'll use the TC to parameterize the implosion time. And here it is. So this is a little bit complicated, but it's basically the same thing as I say. So maximum capture rate. So except that I define a new thing that is basically just the implosion time. But I divided out this Vx divided by rho x. So the reason why I want to do this is in the galaxy, there's places has higher dark matter density or faster velocity of dark matter. I don't want that to affect my constraint. So I just divide this TC out by this parameter. So this parameter then is a constant among the galaxy. And this parameter will directly be linked to the model parameter of my dark matter. So this is the free fermion case, and this is the self-interacting boson case. And this assumes some parameter of the neutron star. So eventually, I will just directly try to set constraint on this parameter itself. And this constraint will be translated into the constraint on the model parameter. It's just a sort of a convenient way for us to set a constraint for the phenomenological reason or for the model reason. Yeah, good. So this is something we call normalized implosion time. Okay, so now we understand the normalized implosion time a little bit. What I want to say is that in general, if the normalized implosion time is smaller, means the model can implode the dark matter easier. And if the normalized implosion time is longer, means the the model can implode dark matter harder. Okay, it's harder to implode because it takes longer time. Yeah, good. And so now I want to show you this figure that is just saying that. So let's look at the rate. So this is the normalized implosion time, and this is the rate. So the longer, so from here, the longer the normalized implosion time, the rate is actually smaller. So this rate is just assuming different total number of the neutron star in the Milky Way equivalent galaxy. So the question you want to ask me is, why does this curve not go down monotonically? Because supposedly, the longer the normalized implosion time, the longer the implosion is, so the rate should go down. So it should just go down monotonically.
Sorry, what is that units, MWEG?
Yes, it's a Milky Way equivalent galaxy. Yeah, sorry, I should say, yeah. So this is just, yeah, this is just saying that it's a galaxy of this size, and also it's assuming Milky Way equivalent. Yeah, I also assume an FW. Yeah, thanks. And this rate actually incorporates the neutron star burst rate and also the capture rate for given the position. And yeah, so when this number is smaller, actually you could have expecting this curve to go up a little bit. So the reason why this doesn't go up but go down when this normalized implosion time is smaller is because that a lot of the neutron stars are already imploded. So the implosion rate actually go down. So a lot of neutron stars are already killed by this implosion. It turned into black hole, so you cannot further implode them. That's why it goes down a little bit. And I haven't talked about FRB, but you can already see here, certain parameter, you can match the rate to the FRB rate. Yeah. This is just considering the rate. There's no detail yet. Good. Okay, so now we understand the rate a little bit. Let's understand the optical signature. So there are two specific optical signature I want to talk about that can set the preferred or constrained neutron star implosion parameter space. Good. So let's go get a very quick review of R process. So R process is a rapid neutron capture process, and this process could happen in three different astrophysical signature. It could happen in core collapse supernova, merging neutron star, and finally neutron star implosion. So each of these has an expected rate. Core collapse is 1 per 100 year. Merging neutron star is estimated to be 1 per 10,000 year. And finally, the neutron star implosion, we estimated the rate just here. And the rate can be higher than the other two. So neutron star fluid, so all this process, I haven't actually explained the process, but the process is just that you can eject a lot of the neutron star fluid into the space. And then this ejected fluid will then go through strong beta decay. And this is something called kilonova events and form heavy neutron-rich elements. So this is kilonova. There's total of 10 to the 4 solar mass R process element produced in the Milky Way, estimated by this group. And this includes gold, xenon, germanium, and uranium. Okay, so one thing that's interesting is that you can use xenon and germanium to do the dark matter direct detection. So if your dark matter can create this element, it's a self-detecting dark matter. So it's really nice, yeah. And yes.
But you also need humans, right?
Yes, you also need humans. So, but dark matter does help human to form because it helps form the structure. So, yeah, I think collective structure. Yeah. Good. So now I want to talk about the constraint that you suggestive constraint you can set for the dark matter. So what is this? What are these figure? Let me explain the curve. X-axis is the ejection mass per neutron star implosion, and the y-axis is the normalized implosion time. So now I want to match the normalized neutron star implosion to the R process element. So since I don't really know how much mass ejection are there per neutron star implosion, So I make it a free parameter. And on the y-axis is how fast the implosion is. So then I can estimate how much neutron star mass I produce. So on this curve, it's saying that I can produce exactly the same amount of the 10 to the 4 solar mass of the R process element in the Milky Way equivalent galaxy. So on this curve, I can produce just enough. And on the right-hand side of this curve, I produce too much. So I can already set a suggestive constraint on this parameter space, given a neutron star implosion ejection mass, ejecta mass. So this is just assumption. So if I can later on determine how much mass is ejected per neutron star implosion, I can set a constraint on the dark matter parameter space. But so of course, we don't really know how much this can eject. There's different group has different estimation, but eventually we probably do need a new numerical simulation to determine it. And Lewis is interested in it, so maybe we'll discuss how we actually do it. So this is one thing. Another thing is also interesting is DES has a kilonova surge. So the kilonova also can constrain the asymmetric dark matter. So the DES, when they search for this kind of kilonova, the kilonova is depending on the model. It depends on the mass and the velocity of the neutron star mass ejected. So here, when we set the bound, not only we have to determine the ejection mass, but also we assume the ejecta velocity to be 0.3 speed of light. This is just assumption. And then we can set a constraint. So the great thing of this thing is there are one day when the DES search is better, it might be able to exclude this R process element constraint. So what this means is that maybe by these two measurements itself, you can exclude the possibility of using neutron star implosion to explain the R process element in the Milky Way equivalent galaxy in the future when the DES is much better. But there's also other complication that you, there's a lot of complication you could add into this constraint. First of all, we know that the neutron star also contribute to the R process element. So you should add into that into consideration, and that will just make the constraint even stronger. So it will move these two curves into the left, because it's only accounted for smaller part of the R process element. So you can also add the neutron star merger estimation into this. And we're actually currently thinking about this, along with the Dracol measurement. Good. So I think this is fine. So any question so far? Good. Okay. So now we understand certain optical signature that's going deeper into the optical signature. And while I want to discuss the quiet kilonova and its morphology.
Sorry, I didn't yes. have a question. So you had a bunch of timers here that listed there, and I mean some was, I mean not here, a few years ago. I guess I'm not quite sure why you have different, and which one should I pay attention to. You had like the bonding time, and then you had the
half
time, and then.
Yes.
So which one is the?
Yes, this time is the longest time. The capture time is the longest.
The rest of them don't matter as much. The capture time is the main, so you just have to wait to accumulate enough.
That's right, that's right. The other time goes through very quickly.
The other time don't matter. Okay.
Yes, yes. It matters for other parameter space. Like if you consider lighter dark matter, all this will matter. But for the super heavy one, it doesn't matter.
And there isn't much model dependence for this collapse time?
Yes, so collapse time, not really, because also we consider kind of simple model.
Sorry, but I mean the capture time. So I guess capture time is the longest time, right? That's
right.
Yeah, so there is not, is there model, any model dependent?
Yes, there are model dependent. So the model, this does have the, actually let me think about it. Oh, the model dependence is kind of the trivial one. It's just saying that What is the degeneracy pressure that you have to overcome? In other words, what is the Chandrasekhar mass of your model, the equivalent of the Chandrasekhar mass? So for the free fermion, you can estimate the Chandrasekhar mass, and the capture time is just how long it is for you to accumulate the Chandra Shankar mass.
Right.
Yeah. So for the boson, if it's self-inheriting, there's an equivalent thing of the Chandra Shankar mass. So you also have to accumulate that amount. So that is the model dependence. Yeah. So it's kind of a sort of trivial model dependence, but it does have a strong model dependence. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So you said there's no simulations yet of these implosions?
Yeah, implosion, there's no simulation yet. And
the different time scales would be an issue, right? What would you want to simulate, a capture or?
That's a great question. Yeah, I have a few slides I can discuss with you about the implosion. It's in my backup slides, but I think I can get to that. Yeah. So there's different way, yeah. I can discuss about it after. I think I can get through this very quickly. Okay. So there is.
Sorry.
Yes.
What's the total amount of mass that you're envisioning capturing, or roughly?
Capturing, you're saying what you're saying is what is the black hole mass initially?
Yes.
Yes, it's very small. So the black hole mass is 10^-14 solar mass. Yes. So the idea is first you form a black hole and then you start to boundary accrete. And it's forming the black hole that takes enough mass to form the black hole that takes the longest time. But once you have enough mass, everything will go through. You'll form a very small black hole, and then you grow very fast and suck the whole neutron star in. Yeah. That's why the simulation is hard, because the black hole is small. So I chat with Lewis about it. So yeah, you're an expert, so you probably know it. Good. So let me first discuss the optical signature of the neutron star implosion. So all these will depending on how much ejecta it is, but I want to talk about the morphology of it first. So let's assume that you can actually have an ejection and have a kilonova event, similar kilonova events. But the neutron star, so the usual kilonova, this name is reserved for the neutron star merger. So we have a different terminology for the neutron star implosion. We call it quiet kilonova. The reason why we call it quiet is because it doesn't have the gravitational signature, right? Because the usual neutron star, you have this kind of merger signature and in spiral signature, but implosion, you don't have the in spiral or merger signature. You could have gravitational wave signature, but it's much weaker than this thing if this is not spherically symmetric. So we call this the quiet kilonova event from the neutron star implosion. And this is without a detectable in spiral or merger signature, as we say. Yes. But these kind of events have a specific morphology. That is, near the center of the galaxy, most of the neutron stars are already imploded. Yeah, I will first explain this shape, and then I will explain what are these two curves are.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, please.
So are you sure there is no gravitational wave signature?
There is, but it's very weak. It's not merger or in spiral signature.
It's not, but the thing is, if you do have a spinning neutrino star and it basically what you want it to become unstable, right?
Right.
So there's no reason for it to be perfectly symmetric if it's unstable, right? So there would be some signature.
Yeah, actually, people actually estimated what they do is they just consider the gravitational wave signature from the collapsing neutron star. For example, if you have a very fast spinning neutron star, more massive than the critical mass, when it spins down, it will collapse. And that has certain gravitational wave signature, but it's much weaker. And for the advanced LIGO, maybe you can see one per 10 years, something like that. So it's very hard to see.
It's probably weak and also at high frequencies, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So maybe you can see one in like 10 years. Yeah. Thanks for the question. So here, the center of the neutron star, center of the galaxy. So this is the galactic distance. So this is from the center of the galaxy to 10 kiloparsec or above. So near the center of the galaxy, the rate for this merger kilonova is very low because most of the neutron stars are already imploded. And far away from the center of the galaxy, the quiet kilonova rate is also low because the dark matter density is just low, so the implosion rate is also low. So you have a very specific morphology of this merger of this quiet kilonova that you can search for. So now let me explain these two different shapes. So ADM1 is just a faster imploding neutrons, faster imploding scenario. So as I link it back to the formula a long time ago, yeah. So this is our normalized implosion time, and we say the longer the normalized implosion time, the slower the implosion is, and the shorter the normalized implosion time, the faster the implosion is. Maybe here, yeah. So if you have a longer normalized implosion time, the implosion is slower. So you actually have a smaller donut because you're still imploding the thing near the center. But with a faster implosion, that is ADM1. So ADM1 is faster implosion, ADM2 is slower implosion. Slow implosion, you have a smaller donut because you're still imploding things more inside. And faster implosion, you have a larger donut, so you can, since you can implode to the things more outside. So this is a very specific morphology you can try to search for once you actually are able to search for this quiet kilonova. So there's a lot of things to be said, but what you actually want to do is maybe you use optical telescope to search for this kind of quiet kilonova without merger signature or in-spiral signature. But it's very hard, kind of hard to do. But if this is actually correlated with FRB, then maybe you can search for FRB first and search for its optical follow-on. And FRB should also have this kind of morphology. So this kind of donut-shaped thing will not only for the quiet kilonova, but also for the FRB, if they are actually from the neutron star implosion. And I will talk about FRB a little bit more later, because it's more speculative. Yeah, any question about this?
So I guess I'm trying to understand. So you're thinking that, I mean, every now and then there's one of these implosion events that happen.
Yes.
It generates some radio waves.
That's right.
And it generates some optical.
Yes.
And you know which, I mean, what is the time scale for, I mean, which one comes first, for example?
Oh, I think you have to simulate that. But I think from the merger that we can get some mileage from understanding the merger event, I think, neutron star merger event, although it's very different, but yeah.
Right, and yeah. For those, I think if I remember correctly, optical came pretty late.
Yeah, both are later.
No, there is some on the kilonova side, some came right away, and then towards the red, 6 days or so.
Right.
No, but also, right away, by that I mean half a day.
Right, I mean, so there's blue, and then it's half a day.
Yeah, there's a blue one and a red one.
But
there's
the
two of them.
The radio signal hasn't come, I mean, until, I think, much later.
No, it's your radios.
Have they even seen radio yet?
It's a different radio, right? So I'm not sure what process you're thinking for the radio.
Well, I don't know. I'm saying, do you expect something like FRB? I mean, if you said there are similar processes, then whatever gives you FRB here should give you FRB there, shouldn't it?
Yeah. No, so this one, I think in order to determine the FRB and the optical signature, we actually need to do the simulation to get that. And they have different, so we have the estimation of the process. So for the ejection, it is some kind of the tube of the tooth pass effect. When things got crumbing, I can answer you partially your question. So when things got more clumpy, the Roche limit will grow larger than the neutron star, and things inside, because they are very squeezed, so they will squeeze things out. When these things are the squeezing is stronger than the self-gravity, so you can squeeze things out. So that's one estimation. People also estimate they consider the millisecond pulsar that is spinning very fast. So when there's a spin-up effect, it can flung the mass in the equator to flung it out. So this is another process for the kilonova or for the ejection. So but for the FRB, the physical process is different. It's saying that you have this field line. So this field line formed by this electron-positron pair, and when star is collapsing, this field line will reconfigure, and then this will release radiation. And the radiation have to reach certain frequency for it to pass out because it has to pass out a plasma frequency. So, and that plasma frequency is around gigahertz. So that's why it's actually natural that this come out in gigahertz to explain the FRB. I'll say this a little bit. So the physical process is different. So we do have to actually estimate which one comes out later or, yeah. So, yeah. But this is just a morphology. So this, we don't care about the detail. I just want to say that if you actually start to see the events and you plot it, it's a galactic distribution, you may be able to see this kind of morphology. Yeah. Good. So there's also black merger. So these are the signature, optical signature. There's also a black merger signature that is the converted neutron star merger. So there is this postulated mass gap between the lightest black hole and heaviest neutron star. So the heaviest neutron star are mostly smaller than 3 solar mass. And black hole, they are the observed one are much heavier. But this could be just observational preference. So from the X-ray binary, you see the black hole are always more heavier. And if for the black hole merger is even heavier. And from the physics point of view, if something is lighter than the Chandrasekhar mass or the critical mass, you don't expect it to collapse anyway. So there, even theoretically, you can say there may be a mass gap. But now if a neutron star merger, if this binary system, the neutron star are turned into black hole, then they can be a black hole merger, that is neutron star mass. And so this can violate the mass gap. And it can give you a signature that is look like a neutron star merger mass, but it doesn't have the optical follow-on. So we call it black merger. And we didn't go into detail to say how we see it, but we just say that this is the portion of the neutron star that is turned into a black hole merger, black merger. So this is the ratio. So again, this is the center of the galaxy going out from the center of the galaxy. This is different implosion speed or how fast is the implosion happen. ADM1 is a faster implosion, ADM2 is a slower implosion. And this is imploding the neutron star merger turn into black hole merger. So this is a ratio of this conversion. So what you found out is that near the center of the galaxy, most of the neutron star merger are already black hole merger. So even if you just find one neutron star merger very near the center of the galaxy and stay there for a long time, then you can already set a constraint for the asymmetric dark matter as well.
So right. This implosion of, you imagine the neutron stars individually collapsing onto black hole.
Sorry, can you say it again?
You imagine the neutron stars individually collapsing into black hole.
Yes.
So is it clear that they will leave a binary black hole that is bound?
Oh, yeah, it's not necessary. That's a good question. You're saying that, but I don't expect the energy that release is so strong to break the binary, right?
Or even change and give it eccentricity, for instance.
Right.
Can it do that?
You change what?
Rather than being a circular binary, mm-hmm. converter into an eccentric binary. So two neutron stars in a circular trajectory leading to a binary black hole system now with eccentricity.
Yeah. Right, I think it's possible, yeah. But we didn't discuss that in detail. What we think about is the naive situation that you have a binary and they turn into black hole but still stay in binary. And of course, they could turn into other system, but yeah. But those won't be black merger. But you could also change it into a different form of black hole binary, but yeah. But all that, if you can actually get a neutron star mass black hole merger or anything, that is still an interesting astrophysical object to search for, right? Yeah.
But I mean, I think your point is still valid that even if you destroy the binaries, that means that we won't see.
Yeah, they will just won't see. Yeah, 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 yeah. Even if you destroy it, you also won't see it, yeah. So yeah, that's also true, yeah.
No, I was looking at the impact of that into the rate for binary black holes.
Exactly.
And the characteristics.
I think obviously, the detail will be different, but I think the point that if you do see a neutron star merger at the center of a galaxy, it goes out.
Right.
Model, I think that
in right. Neutral light.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm going the opposite. I want to say, can LIGO, would LIGO expect a higher density of binary black hole because of it?
I see that's where you're going. Yeah.
If the population could have a significant fraction, a larger fraction of eccentric configurations, LIGO's not so much looking at.
Right.
I see. No, I think that's a detail, but yeah, this ratio is just a naive estimation, so it's not taking into account a more detailed scenario, but it should be interesting to discuss. Yeah, and yeah, I know Louis also have a paper discussing this black merger event recently. Good. Yeah, so the quiet kilonova and black merger, these are very interesting. But it's also harder to confirm because the quiet kilonova, you need the optical signature without black gravitational signature, and the black merger is opposite. If you want to see it, you need gravitational signature without optical signature. So what we want is something that has both. So that's why we study the neutron star merger itself. So from now on, I will talk about the after product of the implosion a little bit. So this is not directly from the implosion itself. It's after, so actually black merger is also the after product. But this neutron star merger galactic distribution is a after product of the implosion. So it doesn't depend on the detail of what happened in the implosion. As long as the implosion happened, you can have this kind of distribution. Okay, good. So here, I plot the fact that we understand there is black merger, meaning that there's neutron star merger turned into black hole merger. So now what we want to look at is just the normal neutron star merger with both gravitational signature and optical signature, and we plot the distribution. So normally the distributions should roughly follow the neutron star distribution. And this neutron star distribution is given by this Sartori group, and also this is roughly tracing the stellar distribution. When there is implosion, however, this distribution will be depleted. And the faster implosion, again, ADM1 is a faster implosion, ADM2 is a slower implosion, the faster implosion will deplete the distribution. So the more implosion it is, the distribution will be more depleted, and you can statistically distinguish the different scenario. So here's a statistical test we do. So in order to test ADM1, because it's very fast imploding, you only need three random events, or five random events to distinguish. So this is saying that I have five neutron star merger with the galactic distribution, and then I can distinguish either it's this one or it's the ADM1 with five events randomly generated. And in order to test ADM2, we need like roughly 15 or, it's 15. So we need 15-ish, it's 15, it's this number. We need roughly 15-ish events in order to test the ADM2. So this is the event that you need in order to distinguish the two distribution in the two sigma sense. This is when we apply the KS test to test this normalized implosion time. Okay. So in 2019, they say there could be order of 10 of the neutron star merger, and 2024 there could be 100. Of the neutron star merger. So these are the time scale that we can test this kind of normalized implosion time. And so we already have one data point of this, that is the neutron star merger we just saw. But this is different because when we do the analysis, we're using Milky Way equivalent galaxy to do the analysis. But the neutron star merger we found is in this elliptical galaxy, so the dark matter distribution is different. However, even that can also contribute to a data. We just have to do the analysis differently. We just have to take into account the dark matter density and the stellar distribution. So we already have one data point, and if we have more, then we can actually do this statistical test. Also the upper curve is the upper radiance, the lower, not the radiance, it's the upper curve. Yeah, quartile. Sorry, I just forgot a term. So there's upper quartile and the lower quartile when you do the statistical test. Okay. Any question about this? Yeah, this is just using the neutron star merger distribution. So finally, I want to say, so before I go into the FRB, I want to say a few words about the missing pulsar problem. So ATNF, they have a pulsar catalog, they plot all the pulsar. And then with the pulsar, the slowing down of the pulsing, you can determine the characteristic age of this pulsar, and you can plot them. And what you find out is that there is a lot, you don't see enough pulsars you expected near the center of the galaxy. Of course, this could be also, there could be also observational problem, but this is what they found out. And this goes very well with the dark matter scenario, because you can say it's dark matter that is depleting the pulsar distribution. And thus, you can explain the missing pulsar problem with the dark matter scenarios. And in the near future, Milky Way's 1 to 500 parsec center will be surveyed by FAST and SKA, so you can have more information about this missing pulsar problem. Good. So let me get back to this. So with so this is the missing pulsar. So this in this figure, I just plot the purple and green lines. These are the future sensitivity that you can probe with 10 neutron star merger or 100 neutron star merger based on this statistical test we do. So you can reach a very, very good sensitivity compared to the current bound. The current bound is this one by xenon 110 and even the future bound. So you can do we count there's 4 to 10 order of magnitude improvement in the sensitivity. So this is really amazing. But this is really amazing. Of course, there's a lot more astrophysical uncertainty we should take into account, but this is what we expect to be able to reach. Yeah. Okay, so now we understand this program. That's
exciting.
Yes.
So where are we right now here? And given that we have detected one neutron star.
We haven't done the one. We don't know yet, because that is a different, that is not a Milky Way equivalent galaxy. So I would say one, right now we don't have a good constraint right now. I should also explain this blue regime. So this blue regime is saying that what is the oldest pulsar that we can find near the center of the galaxy? And around 8 kiloparsec, around here, you find a really old pulsar, and that sets this bound. So with one neutron star merger event, you cannot do better than this for now. The natural question you ask me is, which one can do better? Is it better to find a very old pulsar, or is it better to find to have more neutron star? And I would say it's better to have more neutron star because you have high statistics. And also the neutron star merger, you can see the neutron star merger better near the center of the galaxy. Because for the pulsar, you have to rely on the pulsing for the radio signature, and it's hard to see. But with the neutron star, you have both. With the neutron star merger, you have both the gravitational wave signature and optical signature, so you can go near the center of the galaxy.
I guess the problem with that is that we don't know the density of dark matter near the center of the galaxy.
We don't exactly know, but you can also set constraint on that's integrated into it. So. Yeah.
What's the best you could do with Milky Way, with pulsars? I mean, if you find older ones.
Yeah. So that depends on how lucky we are, right? So if we are lucky, we find an old one that is old enough and near the center, then you directly kill a lot of this. But the question is, now we don't actually see a lot of these for now.
Is this in the sort of aims of the SK, the square kilometer array?
I think so, yeah, I think so. I think they want to search for this region for sure, yeah. But anyway, these are two independent way of doing this kind of probe, so. And also they give you different signature. So it could be complementary. Like if one finds something interesting, so also one thing is that if you see, what should I say? I should say that if you actually see a very peculiar distribution, either in this neutron star merger distribution or in the quiet kilonova, if you actually see a peculiar distribution, then you can sort of have a smoking gun signature for the dark matter, right? Whether it's for the pulsar, it's harder to see. Maybe it's just some, yeah. For the pulsar, it's harder to infer to this kind of thing. Maybe you can also say something when there's a distribution, but we don't particularly predict a certain distribution other than that you don't see a lot of pulsar near the center of the galaxy. Yeah. Or actually, you can also have a distribution. Yeah. But it's just harder to look into the center of the galaxy to see the pulsars. And we don't see a lot right now. Good. So finally, I want to talk about, yeah, any other questions? Good. So finally, I want to talk about a speculative radio signature that is fast radio burst. So the fast radio burst is this millisecond length gigahertz radio pulse, has a very high all sky rate, and the source is undetermined. People have speculated this could be from the neutron star implosion induced by dark matter by Fowler and Ott. They estimate the energy released by the neutron star implosion could match what is required for the FRB. So what we do is just we improve the rate calculation by considering the realistic star formation history by Hopkins and Beacon and neutron star distribution. And what we found out is that the rate can match the typical FRB rate. For example, if you assume there's 10 to the 9 Milky Way pulsar, you can match the rate with this normalized implosion time. So from here, you can say, okay, so maybe this means that I should test this normalized implosion time because this can explain FRB. So this gives us a target to test this 50 normalized implosion time. And for FRB, as I said, FRB could also have this kind of morphology if all FRB are from the neutron star implosion. Of course, we know that the repeated FRB cannot be from the neutron star implosion because you only imploded once. But if you find all the other non-repeating FRB have this kind of distribution, then you can test the scenario. Yeah. So there are some origin of the FRB, but for the time, I'll just skip it. Yeah, so people actually estimated the energy release and all this kind of more detailed thing of the FRB. But what I want to say is that, so you can also do a similar statistical test for the FRB. You can say, okay, so my FRB give me a distribution of the, so this is testing the FRB caused by the dark matter implosion from the neutron star, FRB caused by the dark matter induced neutron star implosion, or FRB caused by the non-imploding population of neutron star. And then again, you can plot the cumulative distribution function, and then you can do the statistical test. So this is very interesting statistical test because you find out that actually it's easier to test the slower implosion than test the faster implosion. And the reason is very simple. It's nothing. Nothing special. It's because the usual neutron star distribution is like this, but a slower implosion give you a shape of the FRB like this, and the faster implosion give you a distribution of the FRB like this. So it's actually easier to see to distinguish this and this, distinguish one and two, than to distinguish one prime and two prime. So actually, the slower implosion is easier to distinguish from the neutron star, the normal neutron star generated FRB scenario. But of course, we don't really know the origin of FRB. This is not really a, this is just a demonstration of how much event we need to see. Good. So, okay, so I'm near the end. So these are the, so again, these are the astrophysical motivation for the dark matter induced neutron star implosion. We talk about the missing pulsar, FRB enrichment, enrichment of our process event, and black merger. And the outlook is that there's all these kind of events that can be searched for by the telescope, the gravitational, the optical telescope, interferometer, and also radio telescope. And we should be able to test different dark matter implosion scenario in the next few years. And we should expand to a wider mass range and coupling strength. And there's other many rich phenomena one could explore. And we should also extend this to consider different dark matter model. And we plan to think about maybe also there's neutrino signatures. Yeah. But overall, I want to say that it's very important to understand the neutron star and nuclear physics better for any program that is involving the neutron star. And it's really a golden age for neutron star phenomenology because you can actually understand its equation of state and other things better. It's also a multi-messenger astrophysical probe for new physics. And eventually, we actually want to do this neutron star implosion and collapse simulation with maybe the people here. Thank you guys. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
Any more questions? If not, let's thank you again.
Thanks.